Welcome to Outsources. I'm Karen Rayforth. This evening, Outsources welcomes back occasional contributor to Outsources, Dr. Glenda Russell, psychologist, researcher, writer, and history buff. She'll be interviewing recent CU graduate and historian Caden Stice about Boulder queer political history, starting in the 1970s. They'll look at some of Caden's findings, as well as look at the broader implications for history in our current situations across this country, as well as implications now in Boulder and in the future.
Hi, Caden. It's good to see you again.
You as well.
Since the last time I talked with you, you have done quite a bit of work, including you've finished an honors thesis at the University of Colorado, or should I say an award-winning honors thesis at CU, and you've also graduated, right?
Correct. So over the last year, I've been spending my time, aside from the stifling confines of the pandemic, working on this research about Boulder's queer political history from the 1970s to modern day. And as Glenda mentioned, it is award-winning, but I won't boost my ego too much on that. It's been a really rewarding process.
Actually, let me. Why don't you boost your ego? Tell me, I know of a couple of awards you have received for this research. Tell us about them.
So I won two awards for it. The first is the Thompson Award through the Center of American West at CU Boulder. And then the second one was the Top History Honors Thesis through the Department of History at CU Boulder as well.
Congratulations, that's really wonderful.
Thank you.
Let me take you back to the beginning of this process for you. What made you decide, you know, you're a history major, you could have studied a lot of different kinds of things. There's a whole world out there that, you know, and lots of things about history that we don't know anything about or don't know enough about. Why did you pick this topic?
Well, way back at the start of the pandemic, I knew I wanted to write an honors thesis, and my initial idea was to go back to the American Revolution period and look at the queer history of way back then. But then all of a sudden, there was a lockdown, quarantine, all of this, and so it seemed a lot better for myself to just stay local, to stay to my home, because that's where I was. And so I had heard the story about Clela Rorex before in just whispers and passing, and I was like, that seemed like a good starting point, and I really wanted to just hone in on that. From there, I slowly discovered that's a very small and perhaps misrepresentative picture of Boulder's expansive LGBTQ+ history. And so I kind of just kept rolling with it. I've done 16 oral history interviews with that, and it's been a exciting process, if not just to learn about my own experiences as a queer person growing up in Boulder County, and then relating that to how the historical trends have been in this area.
How much of that history were you noticing growing up in Boulder County? Obviously, a lot of it happened before you were born. But as you were a young person in Boulder County, were you noticing the things that happened in the queer community or the things that influenced the queer community?
Well, so what's interesting about that is when I say Boulder County, I do mean Longmont, not Boulder itself, Boulder proper. But what was interesting for me is I did not grow up in this supposedly progressive environment that I'd always heard Boulder and Boulder County was. My environment here in Longmont, albeit, it was very conservative, very restrictive, and being gay is the big no-no, ultimate no-no. And the story I can pinpoint directly to that is right after the same-sex marriage ruling in 2015, the court case name is slipping me. I went
Obergefell.
To church. Yes, Obergefell, thank you. I went to church that following Sunday, and they had all the lights off. Everyone was crying. They were mourning about this. And this is supposedly in a very progressive place. And so that was very interesting for me, where I've always heard this is such a welcoming, tolerant, accepting place. And then my own experiences were like, no, that's not. And so this history kind of helped me at least understand, yeah, it's not just me. I'm not just gaslighting myself into thinking that this has been something that's gone on for a long time. And Boulder's progressive bona fides haven't always been the case.
Yeah, I guess not. Did you notice anything? You're talking now at a kind of interpersonal and institutional level. You look at your church, you look at the people who are in your church, and they're not real happy about the idea of having gay people in their midst. As you were growing up, did you notice any of the political situation for LGBTQ people in the county or in Longmont in particular?
Yeah, so I remember growing up out Boulder when they still had a post here in Longmont. I remember seeing them and the rainbows and always a little confused but intrigued by what that meant. And then slowly as I began developing my own political beliefs outside of that conservative environment, learning that there is a lot more tension in that. And granted, now in 2021, that tension is a lot more dissipated than it even was 10 years ago. But it's still important to remember there's still pockets of this area that still have that regressive mindset in places.
Yeah, for sure. So as you went about this process, what surprised you?
I think what surprised me is when you think of queer history on a very broad national level, you always think of Stonewall. That's the first thing you go to. And in reality, Boulder has an equally rich and exciting history. It just doesn't have the media coverage that it did, as Stonewall did. And so what interested me is, especially the story of Penfield Tate, you have a Black man in an overwhelmingly white city, and he still knew how to get through that system and navigate it. And what's also interesting is you see that shift in Boulder's politics. He ran, when I spoke to his son actually a few weeks ago, his Penfield Tate II, he ran as an anti-Vietnam candidate in Boulder, capitalizing on that anti-war sentiment that was starting to shift the politics of the city. And so I think Penfield Tate, he answers the question of, if you could have any historical figure at your dinner table, who would it be? He's the person, because he is such a unique figure in that he navigated a system already bent against him. And then even as a straight ally, he still helped the LGBTQ community way back in 1974.
Mm-hmm. What have you heard about Penn that has surprised you?
I think, again, it's this idea of a straight ally who he already had the weight of the world on his back as a Black man in the city that had very strong racial overtones. Mm-hmm. And he still was persisting forward and going with that humanitarian spirit. And I also don't want to idolize him and make him something he's not. He was still just a human, but still remarkable that he wasn't just someone who was a part of the community, but he still felt the need to put himself out there.
Mm-hmm. And it's interesting because Penn's politics in general were not terribly radical at all. I mean, he voted with the majority of the council most of the time, including he voted with the most conservative member of the council most of a vast majority of the time. So there was something about him, it wasn't this broad, I'm a radical and I'm going to do everything radical. There was something really specific about human rights that just moved him to take those kinds of risks.
Yeah, and I think, again, it goes back to, he was a Black man. He had experienced that discrimination when he was serving in the military beforehand. And so I would presume, having never met him or the ability to meet him, that for him, it was just simply an extension of what he had experienced. And he saw that another group of people was not being treated equally. And mm-hmm. so it just made a natural sense to go forward.
Mm-hmm. Well, he certainly went forward with it. Who else did you hear about or meet or do interviews with who had stories that really impacted you along the way?
So I think jumping to 1987, with Cap Morgan, who led the Equal Protection Coalition to amend Boulder's city law so that there is an anti-discrimination ordinance for on the basis of sexual orientation. What I think was interesting about her story, especially, is she came from the East Coast, and she also had this idea that Boulder is a progressive, liberal, forward-thinking area. And then she came here in 1984 and realized that's not the case. And so for me, it was kind of like, oh, even though we come from two different backgrounds, it wasn't just me who was thinking, oh, this doesn't align. She herself was like, oh, this doesn't make sense for this outward topical appearance to the actual internal politics of the city.
Yeah. Yeah, she found that pretty quickly when she approached council and asked various council members if they would basically introduce the amendment, what would have been an amendment to the city's human rights ordinance, and she got a resounding no, we won't. She also got asked, did you hear about what happened the last time? And then she went to the library and found out it was kind of a mess the last time back in 74 and 75. What's been the reaction that you've gotten to your thesis? I've read it. It's a really good thesis. I enjoyed reading it. How have people reacted?
I think overwhelming, a lot of people have loved it, found very positive connotations with that. But I've also shared it with a pool of people who I know would react well to it and receive it well. The people who, again, being in a more conservative environment growing up, they haven't read it. They don't know what this thesis is. They just know it's older history. And so with that, as well as received as it's been to a pool of selected people and not to that greater community necessarily.
Do you think you'll show it to anybody in that community?
Over time, I will. I had shared a portion of it on Facebook to one of those Facebook groups, trying to gauge more interviews so I can learn more about the experiences. And one of the comments on there is, this isn't Boulder history. This is, and I won't use the word they use, but this is a bunch of garbage. Mm-hmm. We don't need to learn about this. And so again, when people are in the confines of their social media, not in person, they feel a bit more comfortable saying those harsh and degrading things. But at the same time, I'm more willing to share it out now as I'm talking with both of you and learning more about what, it's again, coming to find my own identity and voice in this mm-hmm. world.
Mm-hmm. What's been the best part of that?
The feeling of liberation, that I don't need to have this restrictive idea of, I need to tiptoe around these topics, that when I'm in the community, I'm like, oh, I will say that I'm queer myself, or that I'm talking about these things, rather than using that coded language and trying to sneak around the community. I feel, for myself, able to be more vocal about that, slowly but surely.
That's great. And I mean, it's an interesting thing. You know, we talk a lot about, in various communities, knowing your history has a real liberatory potential to it. And you're kind of a walking example of that, it sounds like.
Yes. I mean, this will be on the radio, so you can't see. I have my hair grown out now. I'm kind of living that Boulder hippie experience, so to speak. But again, it's just trying to move forward, if that's in a physical presentation, communicative presentation, not feeling this restriction that if these people in this 1970s could put themselves out, 1980s, 1990s, well, why can I not continue that trend? Mm-hmm. And so that's my gay agenda, so to speak.
Well, that's a wonderful gay agenda, actually. And it's a wonderful example of learning from history and using history as an inspiration.
If you're just joining us, you're listening to Outsources on KGNU. This week, our topic is Boulder queer political history starting in the 1970s. Dr. Glenda Russell, an occasional contributor to Outsources, is interviewing recent CU graduate and historian Caden Stice. These two historians are talking about Boulder's past as well as implications for current and future use.
We know that, you know, there are generations in the queer community, and those generations often see things very differently from one generation to the next. We also know that in a relatively brief period of time, amazing change has happened for the status of queer people in a variety of ways. When you talk to people, most of the people you've talked to are older than you are. What's that been like to actually plug into another generation, or probably another couple of generations of LGBTQ people, as you've been doing oral interviews and thinking about Boulder queer history?
So what I think is really interesting is there's this dichotomy, and I'm gonna oversimplify it at first, is an older generation has more of this liberation mindset where they just wanna come out of the closet. And it seems a younger generation has kind of just become accustomed to these rights and having them. And so it's more of like this corporatized pride, go down there in your small booty shorts, and there's nothing wrong with that, but wearing like beads from Comcast isn't quite as special as actually changing the human rights ordinance to an entire city. And so I think, again, coming back to my own personal experiences on this, I've seen this generational divide of we had to fight for our lives. And now it's kind of, and it can be positive, it can be negative, but this is just the expectation. It's always been like this. And so that generational divide of pride versus liberation and what that means and how they situate with one another is very interesting to me.
Mm-hmm. You said something a few minutes ago that I think was interesting. And it has to do with the response that you got from somebody on Facebook, I guess it was. And, you know, this is a bunch of garbage. We're in a period of time where looking at history has become an incredibly volatile kind of issue. I mean, people are passing laws, literally, you know, in states, in many states, have laws now, like five, I think, and something like 20 or 25 states are looking at the possibility of passing laws. Most of these laws have to do with, well, they have to do with a whole bunch of things that are just regressive in nature, including things around race and sexual orientation and gender diversity. But in particular, some of these laws have to do with, we don't want to know about history. We really just don't want to know about it. There's a problem with knowing about history. We want to think we're really wonderful. How does your thesis fit into the current time when it's a time that's simultaneously resurrecting history and really trying to understand history, and a time that's trying to erase history and say we want a different image of what our history is like?
Well, as a small side note, I will say when I started my history major many, many years ago, 2018, I was always told this major won't have any greater implications beyond your major. So interesting how that's come to in my favor. But more to the point of the question you asked, I think even my thesis, it challenges this image Boulder has of itself. As we know, we have rainbow flags on Pearl Street painted on the ground. We haven't always been like that. And I think even in a supposedly progressive place like Boulder, we have to confront that history that we have not always been perfect. Our history does matter because there are people who died because of these things. There are people who are still in the closet because of these things. And so it's a really interesting point where all of a sudden history is kind of like, I think the most recent Time magazine cover said the history wars. That's the focal article. And so it's a really interesting time where you have on a conservative side in these red states where they're trying to diminish history and say that slavery didn't happen. We've never been like this. Or if slavery did happen, it wasn't as bad as you think. And even in Boulder, a progressive place, we still have to learn about our history and say, we were not always friendly to queer people. We were not always friendly as we like to think we are. And so it's this interesting, the circle almost loops back to itself of, we have to be honest about what this history is, mm-hmm. so that way we can move forward to make a better future for all of us together.
Yeah. What about, you know, we're talking about history. What about the current? What have, in your study of what has happened here, do you have any hints about what needs to happen in Boulder County in terms of history?
I think what Boulder County needs to do on the surface level, at least, is say, here is our queer history, to at least recognize it. I know in the Boulder courthouse there on Pearl Street, they have like a little plaque of Clela Rorex and, a very interesting story again, but implications to a larger national context, very minute. We need to talk about Tim Fuller, for example, who he lost his city council position as a closeted gay man, albeit. And we need to say, this is who he was. It's very easy to say this is who Clela Rorex was because she gives us the best of our story. Mm-hmm. But Tim Fuller shows we, as a larger community, not as individuals, but as a larger community, we rejected queer people. And so I think that's something Boulder County needs to do it as a very first step, is at least recognize where our history is.
I think that's a really fantastic point. And one of the things that I think we are always in danger of doing with queer history in general, but in Boulder in particular, is thinking about allies and not thinking about the queer people who've been there. And that's a real big temptation to sort of valorize these people. And I certainly agree with you. Penn Tate, whom I knew and whom I admired and whom I still admire, is one of my favorite people. And I would invite him to my dinner too, by the way. If I were going in, I mean, I would love to have him come back and be wearing his beads and sit down and have his great laugh at my dinner. So I mean nothing to take away from the real valor of people who've done amazing things. At the same time, I think it's much easier to talk about allies than it is to talk about queer people and to talk about the pain that queer people are still in many places in our community, especially queer people of color, queer people who are poor, queer people who still have HIV, et cetera, et cetera. What's any reactions to that?
Well, you made a great point about that. When I was doing this thesis research, finding queer people of color in Boulder's history, very challenging. I think I found a handful of people in just glimpses of news articles, but to actually find them and be able to talk to them, because they're dealing with that intersection of perhaps they're a woman as well, so you have that tricumbrate of identities of an oppression on that. And so that's another point, and I'll critique my own work. We need to highlight those even more marginalized communities where not only are they dealing with poverty, for example, but they're also trying to navigate being a queer person in the same world. Yes. And so, again, that's a self-critique. I'll be entirely open about that. The work is not done by any means.
Yeah, it's not. And there's still a lot to understand. And that tendency to look at allies is getting even more interesting with something you mentioned a little earlier, and that is the corporatization of allyhood. And I mean, it's not just at Pride, you know, it's everywhere, although it is certainly at Pride, but it is everywhere. You know, I was just reading a thing the other day, an article about how many corporations are making specific ads around Pride, but are giving money to groups that are fighting LGBTQ rights, both at the same time. We're a market, we're a niche market, we're an easy market to find. And so it's an appealing market. At the same time, there are lots of corporations who really don't like us, but they just haven't said that. And because they don't want to mess with their market, but they put their money in places that are not useful for us.
Again, you make a great point about this queer baiting to get people interested, spend your dollars. And then, for example, Target, they have their Pride collection. It's an abomination to fashion, goes totally against the gay fashion stereotype for one. But also, I mean, I saw one shirt that said ally and it had a rainbow flag. And I'm like, why does an ally need to show off their pride? Mm-hmm. They're not experiencing oppression mm-hmm. for this. And so I think it's a really interesting thing where all of a sudden corporations, it's now profitable to support the queer community, but as soon as that dime flips, they'll drop us really, really, really fast. Yes. So I think that's another thing where we can look to history to know where and when these things are not always going to stay on the up and up. There's yeah. a very easy chance to crash.
It's such a great point, because this is, you know, there are things that have changed and things that are very different than they were, say, in 1974, when Penn and Tim were waging the battle that they waged. And this thing can go back in a minute. There are people who are really interested in taking away, for instance, marriage equality. And there are people who are really counting on that happen with the current composition of the U.S. Supreme Court. So it's... This is not the end. Where do you see you going from here as a person and as a historian?
As a person, I'm in this junction where I'm like, oh, I kind of want to just explore the world. I'm actually going to San Francisco for the first time on Tuesday or tomorrow. Yay. And so that's exciting for me. But as a historian, I want to keep the work of queer history, because for one, that vindication that history is a valid major. It's something worth exploring beyond just science, technology, engineering, and math as a STEM field. And so I want to continue that queer history, whether it be in Boulder, which I do have a particular fondness of because I know it so well now, but also just going out into these other communities to find where's that community's Stonewall? Where is their great moment of history? And yes. So that's where I want to keep going.
That's great. When I talked with you the last time, which was probably a year ago or more, you were thinking you might want to teach. Are you still thinking in terms of teaching or?
Yeah, so I'm actually starting in July here, a master's program at CU in secondary social studies education.
Oh, right. So
I'm very excited about that, if not just to keep combating this historical attack on marginalized groups' histories, but also just because after a year of being in the pandemic, it's nice to actually go around and see people again and interact once more.
That's wonderful. Congratulations, Simon.
Thank you.
I'm thrilled to hear that you're going to graduate school. That's really excellent. What are you looking for in history? What will you look for in history when you go to San Francisco this week?
So I'm going to the GLBT History Museum or Historical Society, but also just going through the Castro District just to, again, it feels silly to say this, but it's kind of like a genealogy project of going back and finding my own personal history to people I never will know.
That's so wonderful.
I'm very excited for it.
That's a hoot. That will be so much fun. I can't wait to talk with you when you get back. Or maybe you would come back on Outsources when you get back and talk about what that experience has been like.
Absolutely. I love to talk about this stuff. It's, again, that liberation of feeling able to talk about this on public radio, nonetheless. So keep moving forward on that growth.
Absolutely. That's great. I'm really pleased. I've asked you a lot of questions, and I've really enjoyed talking with you. What haven't I asked you about that you were hoping to say during this interview?
I think it's nothing that you haven't specifically asked, but again, for anyone listening, go learn about Boulder's queer history. It's fascinating. I think it's also more fascinating than even Stonewall. I'll just put that out there because there's a lot more layers. It's a suburban community, less than 100,000 people. It really deviates against the grain that you might think about for queer history.
I think that's a wonderful invitation. I can't wait for you to teach and make invitations to your students like that. It's been a real pleasure to talk with Cadence Dice today and to learn about the story behind his award-winning honors thesis from the University of Colorado. The title of that thesis, by the way, is Welcome to Lesbian Homoville, Queer Activism of Boulder, Colorado in the Late 20th Century. And the next time you come back, we'll get you to explain that little lesbian Homoville deal because that's a great story unto itself. Thanks so much, Caden. Good luck. Have a great time in San Francisco.
Thank you. Have a great day yourself.
Thanks.
You've been listening to Outsources on KGNU. You've been listening to Glenda Russell interview Caden Stice. If you'd like to hear the whole interview, if you missed something, you can hear it on our news blog at news.kgnu.org or just go to the regular main site at kgnu.org and look for Outsources. We're here every Monday night from 6:30 to 7 with different members of the collective talking about different parts of news and interviews that we think is important to our community. Good evening.